I guess everyone remembers that we're still in the book of Job. Plodding along. 'Fore you know it, though, we'll be finished. Kind of depressing sometimes, isn't it, Carol? But this morning we're in chapter 30. I had a thought last night, and I say this often or occasionally I say this. I don't know that my thoughts are necessarily right all the time, so you can take it or leave it. But I wondered if during Job's affliction and during this time period between the time Job has been afflicted and now, we don't know how long a period of time that it was. If I were guessing, I would say several weeks, but I don't know. But I got to think last night, I wonder if there are periods of reprieve. I wonder if at times the pain and the suffering sort of back off a little bit. You remember when we first started this, and I think it was John McCarty that talked at length about the extent to which Satan was given permission to afflict Job only to spare his life. And I remember John making the comment of something similar to this, that he thought that Job did everything he possibly could do to inflict pain and suffering on him, but come perilously close to taking his life but not doing it. And I wonder if at times Satan relaxes that a little bit and lets the pain subside a little bit. And during those times you may see chapters like 29 that John talked about last week or other chapters, and then hear the spasms or the pain or the suffering, the waves of it return. I don't know that that's the case. There are a couple of phrases in our text today that would indicate that it is not that way. But I just wonder. I wonder if there are times when, because it seems like Job's, the poetry that Job is giving us, it seems it would be hard to formulate these thoughts when you're in excruciating pain. But I don't minimize the suffering that he was in at all. From my perspective, the chapter last week, Job 29, and the chapter next week, Job 31, are two of the greatest chapters in this book. John will do both of them. He did 29 last week, and next week is a good chapter. I encourage you to read ahead. It's a unique chapter. It's Job's last statement in this series. So read ahead. Job has been declared as being a righteous man, a good man. We see that in chapters 1 and 2 from the mouth of God. And that is the greatest evidence that we have of Job's character, is what God had to say about him. We saw it also from one of Job's friends, Eliphaz, in chapter 4, where Eliphaz spent two or three verses talking about Job's character. An impressive two or three verses there in chapter 4. Job was an impressive man. And then last week we saw it at length, and this time from Job's own mouth. Now, anytime anyone goes to tooting their own horn, we tend to discount a little bit about what they say, or it kind of gives us a red flag if somebody goes to bragging on their self. And I don't think that's what Job was doing. Job was setting forth the pattern of his life. John talked about this last week, and I'm going to review it just a little bit because it sets the stage for the chapter that we're talking about. How many of you remember, in fact, if you've got an outline, the first blanks up there, how many of you could guess what goes in those blanks? You see them when E.F. Hutton speaks or talks, people listen. How many of you have never heard that statement before? All the young people, right? All right, that shows you, of course, how many of you remember it? All right, a lot of you. That shows you the power of an effective advertisement. All right, if you don't know what that is, there's an advertisement. What was E.F. Hutton, a financial advisor of some sort? The advertisement, the commercial on TV was this: you're in this restaurant and you hear all the background din of people talking to one another, you know, and you hear it in the background, but you're kind of focused on these two guys, I believe it is. They're sitting at this table and you can understand their conversation, just barely. And they're talking to one another and you can hear all the background noise, and this one guy, they're talking about business, talking about investing their money, I suppose. This one guy says, well, E.F. Hutton says, and then all of a sudden you could hear a pin drop in the whole restaurant. And then the line comes, when E.F. Hutton speaks, people listen. I was thought of that last week as John was talking about Job in Job chapter 29. I'll just run through a few verses in Job 29 just to kind of set the stage and remind ourselves. If you weren't here last week, let this speak to you about what kind of man Job was. I'm just going to pick out a few verses. Job 29, verse 7. Job says, "When I went to the gate of the city and took my seat in the public square, the young men saw me and stepped aside, and the old men rose to their feet." What does that speak to you of? Respect. It doesn't speak to me of that he's got all these people under his thumb. It's not that. It's that these people respect him. The young men look up to him. The older men who are his peers or older respect this man. Verse 9. "The chief men refrained from speaking and covered their mouths with their hands. The voices of the nobles were hushed and their tongues stuck to the roof of their mouths." Again, this is not a picture of someone who's afraid to speak in his presence. It's a picture of someone who defers to Job because they want to hear what he has to say. You see in verse 11, "Whoever heard me spoke well of me, and those who saw me commended me." So Job has a reputation, a good reputation. People speak well of him. And why is it that they do this? He gives us a couple of reasons in verse 12. "Because I rescued the poor who cried for help, and the fatherless who had none to assist him. The man who was dying blessed me. I made the widow's heart sing." Job was a man who gave to help those in need. You see in verse 15, "I was eyes to the blind." What is it that blind people need? Eyes. They need sight. Job says, "I was their eyes." What is it that lame people need? Feet. They need someone to walk with them. He says, "I was feet to the lame. I was father to the needy. I took up the case of the stranger." Verse 17, what is it that the wicked people need? They need their fangs broken. A little different turn here. He says, "I broke the fangs of the wicked." Job was a just man, and he was intent on seeing that justice was done. Down in verse 22, he says, "My words fell gently on their ears." Let me back up to 21. "Men listened to me expectantly, waiting in silence for my counsel. After I had spoken, they spoke no more. My words fell gently on their ears. I like that word, gently. Job's counsel was pertinent. Job's counsel was good, but Job's counsel was tactful. He didn't beat you over the head with it. He says, they waited for me as for showers and drank in my words as the springs rain. A portrait of a great man. We see in verse 18, Job says, I thought I will die in my own house, my days as numerous as the grains of sand. Job had envisioned probably what his life would be like. He says, I pictured myself as growing old, at ease in my own house with my family around, but that's not the way it is. 2 days ago, I went to a man's house, and this man, I have had dealings with him just very briefly, but two or three times over the last 15 years. Probably been 10 years since I saw this guy. He was older than me, probably 10 or 15 years older than I was, maybe more. More than that, now that I'm subtracting in my head here. But I can remember, how I remember the guy was he was a self-sufficient man. A guy that didn't portray himself as having need of anything. He had his life figured out. He had things under control. He had moved to this area from, I think, the Chicago area years ago. And he had his life and his future all mapped out, and things were going according to plan. I hadn't seen him in about 10 years. And he called me, and I went to his house. On the way over there, I wondered. I wonder how he's changed. I wonder how he'll think I've changed. Now, you could look at a picture of me 10 years ago, and you won't see near as much snow on the roof as there is now. So I knew that's people see that difference. How will he be different? I didn't have a clue. I knew he was 10 years older. I got to his house, knocked on the door, and he came to the door. And much feebler than he had been prior. We sat down and talked a while. And he told me this, and I thought of this when I was reading verse 18 there. He said, I never envisioned my life being like it is right now. Said, I lost my wife 5 years ago. He lives alone. He doesn't have any family in the area. He has a child that comes two or three times a year that lives 1,000 miles away. He lives by himself. He walks with a cane. He walks taking very short steps, very feeble. He said, I've been diagnosed with cancer and with Parkinson's disease, and his spirit was different. He said, how I thought my life would be. I never envisioned me being alone and being in this predicament and in this shape. I thought of him. Job had visions of how his later years would be. But Job says they're not that way. They're not that way. Last week, John went through this chapter, showing us Job's character, showing us Job's life. Now we come to chapter 30, and the first two words, but now. And those two words speak to us and suggest to us that we're fixed to see something different. But now. Job has said this is the way things were, but now. So what is different? We're going to read through the verses as we come to them on the outline. The first point, I'm calling this, a portrait of the legitimate outcast. A portrait of the legitimate outcast. Let's read the first 8 verses. Job says, but now they mock me. Now, I don't know if he's talking about these same people who used to stand up when he walked by, who used to defer to his wisdom and his counsel, who used to respect him in the gate. I don't really think he's talking about them, but maybe some of them. But he's talking about mostly a different group of people whom Job was in contact with, or who Job was in Job's community, Job, the society in which he found himself. He says, but now they mock me, men younger than I, whose fathers I would have disdained to put with my sheepdogs. Now that sounds rude. It sounds crude. But let's see what Job is saying. Of what use was the strength of their hands to me, since their vigor had gone from them? Haggard from want and hunger, they roamed the parched land, in desolate wastelands at night. In the brush they gathered salt herbs, and their food was the root of the broom tree. They were banished from their fellow men, shouted at as if they were thieves. They were forced to live in the dry stream beds, among the rocks and in the holes in the ground. They brayed among the bushes and huddled in the underbrush, a base and nameless brood. They were driven out of the land. Now Job describes some people. What I'm seeing Job describe is a certain type of person that for some reason they have a hard time living in a community with other people. Okay, he suggests they are driven out. What is it that would cause human beings to drive out people from their midst and refuse to let them live with them? You could name several things. One could be a harsh prejudice against a certain type of people. That could be it. I don't think that's what Job has in mind here. I think what Job is talking about is a person who is so ruthless, a person who is so vile, a person who is so consuming upon a society that this group of people like this are a drain on people around them. All of us probably, and I know I have had this experience to some degree and have seen it a lot more than I've experienced it, but there are people in the world who drain you of your energy. They drain you of your money. They drain you of your time. And they never seem to learn. You can bail them out of this and bail them out of that, and it's just a drain. And so at some point, you have to say, enough is enough. I'm going to be in the same boat you're in if this continues. And so you have to distance yourself from that person. Now, that person may not be mean. They may not be a thief. They may not be just a scoundrel in whatever ways, but then again, they might be. There are plenty of people who are maybe kin to me or kin to you, our relatives, who if they have the opportunity will steal from me or steal from you. They will take and take and take. They're always the victim. They're always the one who has been wronged. And that type of person eventually finds themselves in the gutter. They find themselves in the parched wilderness that Job talks about. I say they are a legitimate outcast because there comes a point where you are obligated, I believe, morally obligated to let them reap what they have sown, to quit bailing them out of everything that comes along. These people are in this wilderness not because of disease, not because of poverty, not because no one will help them. They are there because people are tired of being abused and used and run over by them. Job says, now they mock me. Now they have found an opportunity to get their foot in the door. They are like a pack of wolves who see a wounded sheep. And they are emboldened once again to come out into the light and to feed and to kill, destroy. Number two, the ruthlessness of this mob. Let's read verses 9 through 15. So he described them. He described where they're at. Now he describes what they do. Now their sons mock me in song. I have become a byword among them. They detest me and keep their distance. They do not hesitate to spit in my face. Now that God has unstrung my bow and afflicted me, they throw off restraint in my presence. On my right, the tribe attacks. They lay snares for my feet. They build their siege ramps against me. They break up my road. They succeed in destroying me without anyone's helping them. They advance as through a gaping breach. Amid the ruins, they come rolling in. Terrors overwhelm me. My dignity is driven away as by the wind. My safety vanishes like a cloud. So Job describes these people. They see an opportunity when Job is down, when Job is weak, when someone who has possessions. Remember, Job was a rich man. And even though a lot of his livestock and everything was driven away and stolen or destroyed, Job still, I'm sure, had many possessions that were still in his presence or in his possession. And these people now see an opportunity. His kids are gone. He has no one to defend him. And he is physically unable to take care of himself, to defend himself. And so the vultures start circling. The vultures start circling and they come in and take advantage of the situation. His servants, if he has any servants left, are probably like the hireling that Jesus describes in the Gospels. They're not going to risk their neck risk their life being killed to protect a few donkeys. They'll flee and probably take some stuff with them. So the ruthlessness of the mob, they come out of the woodwork, circling to get Job's stuff. Number three, the mob on one hand and God on the other. I want you to notice how Job describes God. It sounds very similar to how he describes this mob. The mob is attacking him. The mob is taking advantage of him. The mob is treating him wrongly. He describes God in similar terms. Let's read starting in verse 16 to 23. And now my life ebbs away. Days of suffering grip me. Night pierces my bones. My gnawing pains never rest. In his great power, God becomes like clothing to me. He binds me like the neck of my garment. He throws me into the mud, and I am reduced to dust and ashes. Notice he describes God, God in his great power. God who is omnipotent, God who is able to do all things, this same great, powerful God binds me up. I'm not sure what is meant by God becomes like clothing to me, bounds me like the neck of my garment. I envision that as like being put in a straitjacket. But I'm not sure if that's what he has in mind or not. But he binds him about the neck, and God throws him in the mud. God throws him in the dirt. He says, I am reduced to dust and ashes. In verse 20, Job says, I cry out to you, O God, but you do not answer. I stand up, so maybe you can see me, but you merely look at me. The idea being he looks at me without being moved. He looks at me and is in the condition I'm in, and there's no compassion. It's just a blank stare. You turn on me ruthlessly. Job talking to God. God, you turn on me ruthlessly. With the might of your hand, you attacked me. You snatch me up and drive me before the wind. You toss me about in the storm. I know you will bring me down to death, to the place appointed for all the living. It seems that Job's description of God is very similar to how he described the mob, those who mock him. So Job feels like he's defending himself against this ruthless mob on the one hand and against God on the other. When God isn't attacking, the mob is. The mob and God, both laying siege against him. Point number 3 and 4 sort of go together. The mob on one hand and God on the other. Number 4, and no good Samaritan to be found. If you look at verse 24, Job makes an exclamation or almost a question. He says, surely no one lays a hand on a broken man when he cries for help in his distress. How do you feel when you see someone who is really hurting? If you saw someone have a car wreck or a motorcycle wreck and they are laying in the ditch and obviously they have broken arms or legs or blood is flowing or whatever, how do you look at that and how do you respond emotionally? Do you just keep eating your candy bar and drinking your Coke and walking on down the road? Or are you compelled, no matter what you had planned, no matter how big a hurry you were in, you're compelled to help, to change your plans, to call the ambulance or whatever. When someone is hurting, when someone is crying out for help, it is hard to find a person who is so cold that they are not moved to some extent. Some obviously more than others. Job says this is the natural response. This is the natural response of a person when you see someone hurting. Surely, he says, surely no one lays a hand on a broken man when he cries for help in his distress. Surely no one takes advantage of this man who is crying out for help. He's hurting. Surely a person doesn't come along and slap the guy around some more and take his wallet and his watch and run. That's not what you do. He goes on and says, verse 25, have I not wept for those in trouble? Job was a compassionate man. He says, I saw people in trouble and it moved me to tears. Is not my soul grieved for the poor? Job is a compassionate man. He's moved when he comes across these instances. Then he contrasts that with his own experience. Verse 26, yet when I hoped for good, evil came. When I cried out for help, I got nothing in return but evil. When I looked for light, when I looked for answers, all I saw was darkness. I looked for light, I got darkness. I looked for good, I got evil. Verse 27, the rest of this chapter up to the last verse, is a description of Job's physical body, his physical ailments. He says, "The churning inside me never stops. Days of suffering confront me. All I can see ahead is suffering. I go about blackened, but not by the sun." What is, you reckon that's a reference to? I don't know, but it seems like Job's flesh is rotting. Job's flesh is decaying, and his skin is turning black. He says, "I am black. My skin is blackened, but it's not because I've been out in the sun too long. I stand up in the assembly and cry for help. I have become a brother of jackals. People look at me just like they would a coyote, a companion of owls. My skin grows black and peels. My body burns with fever." And then the last verse, "My harp is turned to mourning, and my flute to the sound of wailing." The outlook that Job had, that the thing that he had anticipated, long years, a long age, a mindset of harps playing, a pleasant life in his older years, is gone. It's gone. He's turned to mourning and to wailing. Next week, we'll finish Job's discourse. Like I said, I encourage you to read ahead. Chapter 31 is different. All right, read ahead, and I'm sure John will enlighten us on what's coming up. Let's pray. Lord God, would you help us to see, Lord, what you want to teach us from your word, particularly this book at this time. Father, would we sympathize with those who are hurting? God, help us not to be so wrapped up in our own plans, in our own lives, that we cannot have compassion for those who are experiencing trouble. God, give us wisdom, give us compassion. God, give us love. And Lord, let it start right here. God, give us a loving and caring disposition for one another. God, knit our hearts together here. Lord, help us to glorify your name through it all.